All right, we're back. My name again is Steve Elzinga. I assume that if you're taking this second class, you know, coaching basics number two, I'm assuming that you took number one and that you started using it. Hopefully you started using it and you saw how it was making a difference. It can make a difference in all your interactions, in your parenting, in your marriage, at your church, in your business. I mean, wherever you interact with people, this coaching style of trying to bring the best out of other people without directing and correcting and sort of pushing people around, letting people have a little integrity in and of themselves. And now, I'm hoping that you're getting this concept of both and. A lot of coaching is non-directive, but there is a little bit of directive. I mean, we've all learned from others, being shown, being taught exactly what we should do. So we're talking about trying to mix these two things together and mixing the directive and the non-directive into what I'm calling the semi-directive form of coaching. And last time we looked at how you can do that by teaching and then asking a bunch of questions. Questions is a good way to teach somebody something without teaching them something. You, in fact, are teaching. When you ask questions, you are teaching people. You're leading people down a certain trail. But you're not dictating the whole trail. You're allowing them to teach some of these things, some of these concepts to themselves. Okay, so how do we make the directive more non-directive? One way is to do it through case studies. Case studies. It's interesting, the Harvard Business School, I mean, it's the premier business school, maybe in the entire world, I don't know. I mean, a lot of important leaders around the world have gone to the Harvard Business School. Well, the Harvard Business School has a methodology of teaching. It's an interesting one. It's case studies. Case studies. In other words, students, instead of just being taught a bunch of concepts, are presented with real-world situations, often dilemmas, you know, where students have to figure out what's going on in this particular story, and then they have to figure out what's the right thing to do, what's the smart thing to do, what's the moral thing to do. Someone wrote this about the case studies. Cases expose students to real business dilemmas and decisions. Nitin Noraya, the former dean of Harvard Business School, writes for Harvard Business Review. Cases teach students to size up business problems quickly while considering the broader organizational, industry, and social context. Students recall concepts better when they are set in a case, much as people remember words better when used in context. Cases teach students how to apply theory in practice and how to induce theory from practice. So, try to understand that. Cases teach students how to apply theory in practice. So you learn a theory, but then you see how it works in real life. But it also goes the other way around. You can look at what people are doing and then try to figure out the theory behind what they are doing. It goes both ways. The case method cultivates the capacity for critical analysis. You have to be involved. You have to think. We're not just handing you this teaching. You have to get involved. The case method cultivates a capacity for critical analysis, judgment, which is right, which is wrong, decision-making, and action. What are you going to do? You have to figure it out. Their students are presented with these cases and they have to do something with it. They can't just throw up their hands and go, I don't know. Which is what so many people do in real life. Well, I don't know. And so they don't do anything, which is to do something. So these case studies are a non-self-hurting kind of way to experience the dilemmas and the hard things of life without getting, you know, personally burned. It's almost like a practice run through life to you see how it goes and you see how your judgments are compared to real life and what's really going on, and but without all the real world consequences of you making really, really, really bad decisions in life. Making the directive more non-directive by presenting case studies. An example in the Bible, Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan. So Jesus did this all the time. They're called parables. Now Jesus could have just told, you know, the concept, you know. But instead, he tells a story, or there's a story that's being told, you know, about what Jesus did in the Bible. It's like the writers of the Bible were giving case studies, you know, that all these things that happened to Jesus, but let's tell you about this one. And then there's a lesson to be learned from it. The Good Samaritan, you know, there's a guy walking down the road and he gets jumped by robbers and he's left half dead. And then, as the story goes, there's a priest walks and he sees the person hurt, but he's on the way to the temple. If he touches this hurt person, he won't be able to go into the temple. In other words, he's got important things to do. And, you know, someone else should take care of this situation, but not me, because otherwise, if I get involved, I'm going to be late. I'm going to be excluded from the temple. I have things that I'm supposed to be doing. People are counting me. He walks on the other side of the road. Then a Samaritan comes along. The Samaritans were not loved by the Jews. They were outcasts. He stops and he binds up the wounds and he brings them to an inn and he gives the inn a person money. And then Jesus said, because Jesus presented this story because someone asked about, you know, love. And Jesus says, well, love your neighbor. And this person said, well, who is my neighbor? And so Jesus could have said, well, everyone's your neighbor. The person in need is your neighbor. Let me teach you this concept. But instead, Jesus didn't do that. Why? Because he could have said that and they wouldn't have listened. They would have said, oh, you know, Jesus is a dreamer. He's not, you know, in reality here. He doesn't know what he's talking about. But instead, Jesus tells a story. He gives them a case. And then he says, at the end of the story, he goes, well, now, which one was a neighbor? Which one loved? As the commandment says we should do. That your original question. What does it mean to love your neighbor? Which one was a neighbor? Now they're caught. They're stuck. Because they have to say, well, the Samaritan, but they don't want to say the Samaritan because the Samaritan is the bad guy. The priest is the good guy. The priest is the one we identify with. We're the priests. So they don't want to say the Samaritan, so they said, well, the one who helped him, which was the Samaritan. And then Jesus said, go do likewise. Now, did they go do likewise? I don't know. But there's a better chance that they listened to what Jesus had to say because he told the story. So what happens? We can tell concepts and people don't listen. They don't pay attention, or sometimes they get lost. Or so, a lot of times people have a hard time applying a concept to regular life. It's true with sermons. You know, a sermon that is filled with all kinds of teaching and all kinds of concepts, and then people have no idea how to apply it to their lives. The story helps people apply it to their lives. That's why Jesus told so many stories. They're all case studies. That's why in preaching you need to tell some stories. Because it's through the stories that we figure out how the concept applies to life. And then we actually maybe do something about it. Jesus tells the story of the two sons, right? In Luke chapter 15. Jesus is eating with the tax collectors and the sinners. And the Pharisees and the teachers of the law say, they're grumbling and they're saying, oh, Jesus, what's he doing? He's eating with these sinners and tax collectors. Now, Jesus could have said, well, look, who are you, number one? What makes you so righteous? And these people sinners. Or he could have said all kinds of things. He could have taught all kinds of things. You know, well, who are you to stand before God? Aren't we all sinners before God? I mean, there's a lot of concepts that Jesus could have taught. And if he had said all those things, do you think it would have made one bit of difference? But instead, Jesus gets involved gets them involved. Tells the story of two sons. Father had two sons. One son stayed home, worked hard on the farm. The other son said, Dad, I want to take my inheritance and go spend it. And so the father gives the inheritance. Son goes off, spends all his inheritance. Then he runs out of money. He's in a foreign land. He's feeding pigs. Pigs are unclean to Jews, so he's unclean. He can't go to the temple. He can't go to the synagogue. And he starts seeing what the pigs eat, and he longs for it, and then he comes to his senses, the Bible says. And what does he say? The first thing he says when he comes to his senses is not, oh, I've hurt my father. I shouldn't have done this. No, that's not what he says. First thing he says is, I'm starving. Who's he thinking about? Himself. Back home, they have food. But how am I going to go back home? How about if I, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm not worthy to be called your son. Make me one of your hired servants. Oh, that might work. So he goes home. He's got this confession in the bag. Maybe it will work. I'll give that. Maybe I'll get something. Comes home and his father runs, throws his arms around him, receives him back as a son before he opens his mouth. And the son confesses. He says, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. But he doesn't say, make me one of your hired servants, because it wouldn't make sense. He's just been received back as a full son. He makes his confession not to get something. That's what he originally thought. I'll make my confession, I'll get something. But now he confesses not to get anything because he's already got everything. He only confesses because now he truly feels bad. Okay, but that's not the main part of the story. Remember? That the story was told because these Pharisees and teachers of the law were grumbling that Jesus is eating with sinners. So the older son hears that there's a celebration. You know, the father kills the fatted calf for the son who comes home. And the older son, well, what's going on? Well, your younger son has come home. Your dad killed the fatted calf. And the older son refuses to come. So the father comes out to him, just like he came to the younger son. And says, son, what's the deal? I've served you all these years. You've never gave me a party. Now, this son who lost everything of yours, spent your inheritance, comes home and you kill the fatted calf. And the father says, son, everything I have is yours. Always been yours. It's all yours. But we had to celebrate. Your brother was lost and now he's found. You know what? And that's how the story ends. The story ends complete because we don't know whether the older son came in or not. And you know why? Because Jesus was looking at the Pharisees and the teachers of the law and saying, are you going to come to the party or no? Because you're invited to. And see, these sinners, they know they don't deserve it. And that's why they can see God's love, because they know they don't have it coming. Your problem is you can't see the Father's love because you think you have it coming. Jesus told story after story after story because people would get involved in these stories. Their guard would be down and all of a sudden some truth would be revealed. They would discover this truth on their own. Jesus didn't have to explain it. There's very little of Jesus explaining things. And people had to get it themselves. And because when you do, it becomes way, way more powerful and life-changing. And so that's what you're doing as a coach. You want to be someone who helps bring about life change. So how would this work? You take a class in an area of study that you would like to coach others in. Then you find or make up a case study that might help your client learn about a particular concept in that study. So, for example, parenting, giving your kids the I am somebody attitude. And we talked about it in the last session. So how would you use case study as a way to do this semi-directive coaching? Well, you tell a story that relates to the I am somebody attitude. You could tell a story from history. For example, Hitler was raised by a father who wasn't very encouraging, didn't give Hitler the sense that he was somebody, and so Hitler spent his whole life trying to be somebody in a rather negative manner. You could tell that story and then say, well, what do you think? How does this relate to the I am somebody attitude? Or the story of Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth was an orphan. He was raised in an orphanage. And there was a big man. His name was Father Matthias. And Father Matthias loved baseball, and he could hit the ball. And Babe Ruth looked at him. That was his mentor. That's who he wanted to be. So how does that relate to the I am somebody attitude? Or from literature, Huckleberry Finn. Mark Twain wrote a book entitled Huckleberry Finn. Huckleberry Finn is an orphan. He doesn't fit in society. He finally takes off and he gets on a raft with another child, a black slave, and they're trying to figure out who they are. All the way down the river, who am I? You could tell that story. And how does that relate to the I am somebody attitude? Or you could talk about your own life. Give an example from your own life. Or you could ask your client, hey, was there anything that happened when you were a child that made you feel like you were somebody? Is there anything that happened to you as a child to make you feel like you were nobody? You know, I'm really into music. I love music. I did a class at CLI on music. But when I was in fourth grade, I was at a chapel and we're all singing along, and a girl at some point in front of me turns around, looks at me and says, who told you that you can sing? And then she turned around. I'm still trying to get over that, right? Maybe I really can't sing. Maybe I really can't do this. Maybe I really am no good at that. Maybe I'm deluding myself as to what kind of speaker I am or teacher that I am. Maybe I shouldn't be doing this class at all or any class. Self-doubts that you have about who you are as somebody. All these things become powerful stories that helps a client think about this thing. And then from there they can figure out what they need to do or what they can do to try to communicate this attitude to somebody else. Make up a story. You just make up a story. You know, there was a child who grew up and he had a brother and he was the younger brother, and the older brother did everything right and the younger brother did everything and he wasn't quite as talented, and the parents said, you know, encouraged, and you know, when people came over, oh, this is my first son and look at all the great things he does, and then they don't say anything about the younger one. I wonder how that feels. How to use the case study to coach a client in concepts. So, okay, so you tell the story, whatever it is, a made-up story, a story from the Bible, wherever you get the story, it doesn't matter. Listen to the story. Okay, you both listen to the story. Secondly, ask the client what struck them about the story. So I told the story, what hit you? You don't have to tell the client what the point of the story is or what it means. Just let them. This more non-directive approach. What struck you? They're going to gravitate towards the thing that means something, and that's the point. It's whatever it means to them, not you. Number 3, ask the client what parenting or whatever the topic is. It might be time management, might be marriage, it might be whatever. Ask the client what parenting concept they got out of the story. What did you get out of this as it relates to parenting? And let them figure it out. Number four, discuss the concept. All right, let's talk about that. What do you think of that? How have you experienced it in your own life? Number five, ask the client what course of action he or she might be interested in pursuing as a result of the discussion of the case study. So you've looked at the case study, you figured a concept out of it, that's the teaching part, and then, okay, so what do you want to do with it? How do you want to proceed? You're a parent, you have these children. What do you want to do? What do you think you should do? See, we have to figure out a course of action. Remember, coaching is about action. What are we going to do because of all this? Number six, pursue a plan to carry out the desired course of action. So this is basic coaching again. You know, once we got a concept, how does this concept relate to what you want to do? Once you figure out what you want to do, then what are all the steps involved in trying to get to accomplishing what we want to do? And then how are we going to manage that? Okay, what are we going to do this week? What are we going to do the next week? Are we going to meet next week? Are we not going to meet next week? How are we going to proceed? So here again, it's just that basic coaching that we talked about in the first class. So far with this semi-directive, we looked at how you can be more semi-directive, not just directive, by asking a bunch of questions. That's one way to do it. And then secondly, here we've looked at using case studies as a way to do the teaching and try to figure it out, what we want to do together as client and coach. And we're going to look at another one the next time when we get together.